Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the weekly podcast about writing all the things. Short things, long things, fiction, nonfiction, pitches, proposals, short stories, whatever. We're the weekly podcast about sitting down and getting that work done. And I am KJ, as I said, and I am here today solo because what you're about to hear is just something slightly different. Don't worry, it's only slightly different. It's still us. We have been doing what we call Book Lab, First Pages, where we invite our supporters to send us the first 350 words of their manuscript, which should be about the first page, and we critique it. We try to be honest, we try to be helpful, we work hard at both of those things, but the most important question at the end of the game is always, would we turn the page? So you're about to hear one of those episodes with two first pages. One is fiction, one is nonfiction. I am really excited about it and about y'all. This is also kind of our pitch to you to support the podcast if you don't already. These first pages episodes normally go to supporters only through a private feed that is super easy to set up. It just comes right in your regular pod feeder. And they're pretty special. It's also true that only supporters can submit those first pages. We can't do them all, but we get through a mighty lot of them, and we've just done a whole ton. In fact, there's an episode from earlier this week that went out to supporters only that you can go back and listen to if you enjoy this episode and if you support the podcast. The other thing you get if you support the podcast is, well, access to our weekly AMAs. That's great, but we're going to be running Blueprint for a Book again this January, and I'm really excited about this one. It's a little bit bigger and a little bit better than ever. We have 5 coaches ready to help. It's going to be super interactive. There are going to be a lot of opportunities for ride-alongs, for AMAs, but for more like live questioning. I think that I am going to be blueprinting along because I need to start a new project. I'm not entirely sure what that is going to look like, but I'm really excited about it. And again, that blueprint is only open to our supporters because, y'all, we should definitely get paid for this work. I think all of us writers know that if you ever sat down and did the math on your hourly rate, you would probably A, crawl into a hole crying, and B, go become a barista. I used to, when I was a lawyer, have an office mate who would sit around and go, "I've done the math. You and I would be making as much money if we were toll booth collectors. And then during quiet times, I could sit in my booth and play my guitar." I don't know if he's still a lawyer. I'm not. But his words really stuck with me. A shout out to Craig, who was one of the best office mates ever. You can't really be a toll collector anymore. That's all been automated, as has so much. But we can all still be writers. And one of the best ways to get our first books or our second books or our 10th books ready to head out into the world is to start with the blueprint. So we are running a special December-only sale on memberships/supporters for the Hashtag Am Writing podcast. Normally, it's $100 a month. I'm sorry, that would be a lot. No, normally it's $100 a year or $10 a month. But right now, y'all can grab it up before the end of December for just $75. I feel like I'm selling you knives, but I have to ask for these things. And I don't know about you, but I have noticed that I do not mind at all supporting my favorite stuff. I just sometimes forget to do it. So this is me asking you to head in to amwritingpodcast.com, click that support button, whatever I have labeled it today, because I change it all the time, and get that, sign up for that $75 a year, and then join us for that blueprint, which is going to be super fun. Meanwhile, finally, on to our Book Lab First Pages episode. I hope you enjoy it. You can find more of these in the private feed or in the at the website for the podcast, amwritingpodcast.com, also amwriting.substack.com. But you know what? If you don't know what a Substack is, do not worry about it. It's still just a podcast. It comes just like everything else, and the show notes show up in your email. All right. Thanks so much for giving me a few extra minutes here at the beginning, and I hope you enjoy the episode.
Hey, I'm KJ Dell'Antonia, and this is another episode of Book Lab First Pages, a little thing that we here at Hashtag AmWriting like to do for our special supporters. We're going to go through two first pages today. The rules are as follows: 350 words, please end at the end of a sentence, titles optional. We actually have them for both of them today. This is going to be our first nonfiction but not memoir submission, so that's kind of fun. And then the second page is going to be fiction. I already told you who I am, and I am joined today by my co-hosts,
Jess
and
and I'm Serena Bowen.
Cool. We're a little slap happy. I don't exactly know why, but we're gonna do this thing. All right. My job is to read the first page. This is me, you know, satisfying my secret desire to be an audiobook narrator, which actually does not exist. But in any case, our first page comes from it's nonfiction. We have no pronouns for the author, so we're just going to call them they and them, because we actually don't know what their preference is, so that's what we're going to go with. Here we go. This is called New York Hippodrome, A Kaleidoscopic Cultural History. The evening that New York Hippodrome opened its doors on April 12, 1905, Fred Thompson stood in the entryway. He was 32, but looked younger, with a clean-shaven face, blue eyes, and dark hair. The architect of the Hippodrome and of the shows presented within, Thompson was underdressed for such a monumentous occasion in a rumpled business suit of brown stripes and a black felt derby hat. His shoes were muddy. Unlike other theatrical producers of the era, Thompson did not care much about his own appearance. He's not too proud to walk up Broadway with a visibly torn shirt, a newspaper profile noted, but he never strolls up Broadway. When he walks rapidly, and when he rides, his chauffeur ignores speed regulations. Thompson was a dreamer, an energetic one whose mind was always leaping ahead to the next project. He went back inside, greeted some friends in the two theater boxes he had reserved, and then disappeared backstage. Ever since he worked a concession at the Chicago World's Fair, Thompson had dreamed of creating dazzling spectacles. He turned a self-proclaimed exposition fiend. No, I'm sorry. He turned into a self-proclaimed exposition fiend, designing buildings and carnival attractions for World's Fairs in Nashville and Omaha. The Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York, was the event where Thompson first collaborated with his business partner, Skip Dundee. Dundee was young, too, with a square jaw and gray eyes, but did not appear boyish, thanks to his receding hairline. The son of a judge, Dundee grew up listening to stories at the family dinner table told by his father's friend and hunting partner, Buffalo Bill Cody. That whetted young Skip's appetite for show business. Once he and Thompson joined forces, though Dundee stayed in the background as the financier and quietly reliable businessman. Together they opened Luna Park on Coney Island in the summer of 1903. With its 10-cent fee and ever-changing roster of attractions, the amusement park had drawn enormous crowds. Luna Park made Thompson and Dundee millionaires, but that venue sat on the fringes of Brooklyn. The Hippodrome stood at the heart of modern Manhattan. That's our first page. Okay, so for this one, we may need to assume an interest in the subject matter. I mean, and this has given me an interest in the subject matter, but I'm just going to say, let's throw that out there. Let's just say what we want in life is a historic, quote unquote, dad book. And now we can talk about this. Thoughts?
as someone who reads some of those books, my mind immediately went to things like Devil in the White City, books that are about, like, you know, the state fair slash world fair slash, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I'm assuming it says it's a kaleidoscopic cultural history. I'm assuming that this is going to be not a mystery or a thriller. It's just going to be about this thing. At least that's what the title is telling me. And there's some lovely, I have to say, there's some lovely moments in here. There's the stuff, you know, we get the beginning of that discussion of the Buffalo Bill Cody, or where was that in there? Yeah, Buffalo Bill Cody in there. And I'm like, my ears pricked up and I'm like, wait a second, but this is, once I get to the end of it, it says that, but that was on the fringes of Brooklyn. This other thing is in the heart of modern Manhattan. So am I going to get to hear more about some of the things that made my ears prick up? I don't know, because by starting a book by talking about what something is not, it puts me in a weird position of not wanting to get excited about some of the things that I wanted to hear about, because now I'm being told, but that's not what this is. So there's a little bit of dissonance there for me. But I love a super geeky nonfiction cultural history, especially when it's kaleidoscopic. So I'm going to be more likely to give people the benefit of the doubt. But I felt a little bit hesitant to give myself over to it at the beginning, simply because of that opening. And I'm not saying that that opening about how this was that and this is going to be another thing is a bad way to go, because I think that's a really interesting sentence. It just affects how much I'm going to be willing to invest in something that isn't necessarily the thing that I've been told about. See what I'm saying?
Yep. I think you just convinced me that maybe they're partnership history is a chapter two material.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And that if I were writing this book about this space, okay, please bear in mind that I know nothing about the Hippodrome, but I would not want to write this book without starting the entire book with some really fascinating thing that happened on opening yes. night or during the first month. They're like, give me right away a story about the Hippodrome and something that happened there to convince me that, yes, I have indeed made the right choice to open this book and read an entire book about this one property.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes. Like, make me sure.
I agree. I think, I mean, I would start this book, and this is, again, you know, good writing comes last, kids. This is, once again, really well written. There's so much great stuff here. But I would start this book with whatever the most exciting thing is that ever happened at the New York Hippodrome. And then I would end that on a cliffhanger. And then I would go back to, you know, where this all got started.
Yes, do that.
Yeah. Can I add one really interesting thing? So I just Googled the New York Hippodrome. And the Wikipedia entry has me super in. I'm in with the Wikipedia entry.
Yeah, there's something like the big that happens there.
Yeah, it says the glory years, and there's something about Houdini was there, and there's a decline and fall section in the Hippodrome thing, and then there were elephants. Like, I'm into all that stuff, so if you give me some of that at the beginning, You're opening, let me just, and I'm going to say it this way, and I do not mean for this to sound mean. The opening page of your novel needs to be more interesting than the Wikipedia entry that I can read when I Google it. And now, knowing what I know from the Wikipedia entry, I would totally read a book about this. It sounds fascinating, but this page is not going to make me do it.
I'm also going to guess that there's a better title, but that's okay. Like, that's mm-hmm. just... And also, I don't know who the target audience is, but if the goal of this is general audience, non-academic audience, I would come out, you know, I would call it When Houdini and the Elephants Took Manhattan. I mean, anything,
yes,
really.
Yes, yes.
But anything, but this is, I mean, and then you're, you know, a kaleidoscopic cultural history of the New York Hippodrome is your subtitle.
Well, and also the other thing is, as I have just found out at Wikipedia, is, you know, this was, there's some romance to this. This was on 6th Avenue. You know, at the end, he talks about they talk about the heart of modern Manhattan. I'm one of those people who loves to go places and then try to envision what it looked like 100 years ago. I'm just one of those people. I love the muddy boots that are described here. I love, you know, whenever I cross Delancey Street, I'm thinking about pickle cellars in New York City and stuff like that. So I'm all in on this sort of romantic history of New York. And if there was this incredible place with elephants and Houdini on 6th Avenue in what is now modern Manhattan, I am enchanted by that story. And I can't wait to read it if the book can create that romance for me.
And the romance is missing. We have some characters. Like, it's not that I don't want more about Fred Skip, and, you know, Skip and his receding hairline and Fred and his speeding chauffeur. Yep. Like, those are great details. I just don't think they're your first page.
Yep. Yep.
The speeding chauffeur, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Can he like zigzag around some elephants? Because that would do it for me.
Also, if Houdini was ever there, just go right there and start there.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Houdini is always a good place to start. There's a rule.
And you were talking on the another episode about a memoir, and Jess said something like, "If you want the people who always read this kind of memoir, but if you want other people," and that really sticks with me for this one too, because like you can have the New York history nerds the way you've got this now.
Oh, yeah.
And there is totally an entire bookshelf of books for New York history nerds that needs filling. But if you want me as well, then you have to start with some flashbang.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. So should we get to the hard question? Would you turn the page, Jess?
Okay. So the book as it's written now, the page as it's written now, probably not. You know, but given given a couple of the items from the Wikipedia page, then yes, then I would turn. So, but the
you
way
would turn the
now,
page if it
not.
Was a different page,
right?
That's not how we're supposed to. Sincerely trying to help, and there is nothing wrong with this page. It's just not the first page.
Yep.
And yeah. I've given away my answer, so to the theme of my barking dogs potentially, I would not turn the page if this was all there was, and I was not being assigned this in a class. I would not turn the page.
Well, and that's why, you know, that's why Devil in the White City did so well, is that there was this whole, yes, it was about the World's Fair, very much about the World's Fair,
yeah,
but it was also about
that had a mystery and
drama.
Stuff. I don't think we need to dump that on this author. This doesn't need to be that.
No, but there's all kinds of drama that it can be about, is what I'm saying. That's my point, is there's clearly a ton of drama around this place and this site and what the things that happened there, and that's where the story lies.
Right. Serena, would you turn the page?
Maybe. Sorry.
Okay. Well, you know, that's what we're doing here. We're helping. We hope.
Well, and what's funny is, and this is sort of a slightly off topic, but it was funny. I was looking at something that Alan Alda wrote recently, and his family was involved. His mom and dad were involved in vaudeville, and that's actually where Alan Alda got his start. And it would have been around this time. So immediately my brain was like, oh my gosh, you know, could there be a connection? You know, there's so much fodder here that is exciting, and so many ways that you could make it. That this story could be really, really exciting. So I'm hopeful. I'm really hopeful for this author because they're great. They're really good writer. It's really interesting. I've never read anything about, I didn't even know this place existed. And so I want to know more. I really, really do. I just wouldn't turn this page.
Right. And, you know, you don't obviously have to rewrite your whole book, but maybe find a different place to start it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was our first ever nonfiction submission. Now we're going to move on to a piece of fiction. This author did give us her pronouns. It's she, her. All right, here we go. This one is called Misfits of Mermaid Diner. Holding a pair of tweezers in one hand and a can of Scotchgard in the other, Stella Singh sprays the top of a golden brioche bun until it shimmers like a Las Vegas showgirl. With pickled red onions, tendrils of green leaf lettuce, and oozing American cheese, the Golden State Burger is camera ready. "You're beautiful," she whispers to the burger. Stella tweaks a piece of curly lettuce with tenderness and steps away so the photographer from Sauté magazine can take photos of the recently crowned best burger in Los Angeles. Her shoulders held back, she feels like a pageant mom who made her kid an underdog, a bona fide winner. "Nice work!" Stella looks up as Chef Vinny, the man behind the Golden State Burger, passes by on his way to the kitchen. "I don't know how you did it, but we've had a line out the door for the last month." Chef Vinny is the quintessential Los Angeles chef, with a kitchen knife tattoo on his muscular forearm and just enough attitude to make him interesting. He's an absolute dream for a food publicist. "Just doing my job, chef." She gives him a crisp nod, trying not to preen under his compliment. Stella's primary job was handling clients, which usually entailed a lot of hand-holding, ego-stroking, and telling them that, yes, having a fried egg sandwich could make or break their breakfast menu. But her real job, the one no one talks about, is to make everything look uncomplicated and easy, as if a cover shoot in a national magazine was just another day at Champagne for Breakfast, the hospitality agency where she sold her soul for weekends off. But the truth is, she worked her ass off to get this media hit. She jumped through every hoop imaginable and called in every favor she had with Los Angeles journalists. She sent countless press releases, media alerts, and emails drenched in synonyms for burgers and delicious. She was sick of herself and could only imagine how the media felt. But Stella also knew all she needed was one food writer, one influencer, or even one D-list celebrity to make the trek to Burger Barn, an innocuous roadside restaurant in an affluent suburb outside the epicenter of Los Angeles, to show the world what she already knew. This burger was a superstar. All right, that's our first page. Thoughts?
Okay, I have so many thoughts.
Me too! This is juicy. Burger. Burger okay. Pun. We can use lots of burger
like a
pun.
Juicy oh. Burger.
Oh, jeez. Oh, jeez.
No pressure.
Okay, so the first part is, to me, okay, the first half of what we just did was outstanding. And then the second half of this short bit cooled off for me a little bit. So it's maybe not fair for me to know that that a food stylist is totally a job that, and I was expecting her to be a food stylist. And I can kind of come along with you that her real job is publicist and she had to kind of learn how to style food to be, you know, the jack of all trades. But the way that this ends with she needs the burger to be a superstar, like, you know, on a first page, we always want the character to want something like, you know, even if it's only a drink of water, is the famous line by, oh my goodness, Vonnegut. But that surprised me. Like, why is she so invested on the success of this one burger, even though I adore the way she whispered, "You're beautiful," to it at the beginning. That was so cute. And comparing it to a Vegas showgirl and a pageant mom, and that was all amazing. But why? I'm a little stuck on the why.
Yeah. I am so with you. I was so excited by this right through Chef Finney, and she's just doing her job. And then I got super confused by what that job is. And not just because I don't understand why she wants so much for this burger. It's actually okay for me not to know why she wants so much for this burger on the first page. That's fine. But I don't get her primary job is handling clients. The place is called Champagne for Breakfast. It's a hospitality agency? I don't know what that is. She's sending out press releases, media alerts. And I get it. She just needs a hit for this one place, but it's not. I am super confused about whether she's a publicist working for this restaurant or whether she's something else. And some of that, I think, is the idea of a hospitality agency. Some of it is the name of the hospitality agency, which sounds to me more like I don't know, a wedding caterer? So I had a lot of confusion in there.
Right.
There's one thing that clunked for me, and I was really excited about it when I first glanced at it. The last sentence is, this burger was a superstar. Not only is there a tense problem there, because the whole rest of the paragraph, the whole rest of the thing is in present tense. I wanted that, because that burger is a superstar. That could be her want. I mean, I still don't understand fully why she wants so much for this particular burger, but I just have to, since that last line is doing so much heavy lifting for the rest of the page, I just had to point out that it clunked for me where it could have been the star of the show.
I also have to say that I was confused by the fact that the burger has also already been crowned the best burger in Los Angeles. So I don't understand.
Fantastic point.
Why she's still, it seems like she's already gotten what she wanted. And I don't think she
Unless
has.
It's another
so I'm confused.
Burger. Yeah. Okay.
Her own fame and fortune as the burger mogul. I mean, who knows? I don't know.
But she doesn't seem to be the burger mogul. So much confusion after so much gracious.
Right. And honestly, this is so fixable.
Oh yeah.
Like everything that we're confused about is like 5 minutes work on this page. Which is, she obviously has the chops to really write the heck out of this story, and she's going to do it. And even the way she describes the chef is great, you know?
Yeah.
So we love
attitude to make him interesting, that then it's immediately clear that her interest is not romantic. And whether it is later, I don't care. I don't think it is. But no, she's like, it's an absolute dream for a food publicist. I'm like, yes, that's...
And my favorite line in this is just doing my job, chef, because using the word chef implies, you know, the respect you're supposed to give a chef. And yet at the same time, there's this tension of respect for the chef. So I love the, you know, using the language of restaurants there to underline the little bit of tension going on. So there's so much good here. And as Serena said, it's fixable.
I wonder if this writer, I've met other writers who struggle to take things out that aren't working. Because there's this whole bit where she's like, she's so sick of herself and she wrote all these, like, I don't know if we want to put I'm so sick of myself on our first page either. In this context. Anyway.
Yeah. 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 There's nothing wrong with the writing of that particular phrase. It's just confusing. Isn't the burger already a superstar? What is it that you do? And the only confusion we should have is, why does she want the burger to be a superstar? That is fine. We actually should really want to know that and also not know.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yes. And
All right.
Did we talk about the title? I'm sorry, I was confused by the fact that my dogs are making noises, but
we didn't.
The title is Misfits of Mermaid Diner, which has some I like and should carry some of the weight here, and it didn't really for me, like it didn't give me much more. So is this going to be about the diner specifically, or is this about the burger? Is this about the PR agency and the champagne for breakfast? All that sort of stuff adds
well, this
some
is not a,
for me.
This is not the mermaid diner, because this is the burger. Okay. It's the first page. That's to some extent okay. But I get what you're saying there. It's a good title. It's not really clear it's the title of this. That might be okay. I just, you know, it depends on what comes next.
And I would love to just say to our listeners, all of this confusion or all of this criticism or all of this, whatever it is we do to these first pages, you know, every time I think about it, it raises the bar for not only the things that I read, but the things that I write. And so I welcome this, but I also again want to say thank you to the people submitting stuff, because it takes so much bravery to do this. And every time we say, here's what's not working, what we're saying is, what we've got so far, generally speaking, is really good. And there's fixable stuff here. So I just want to give more props to the writers while we're doing this.
Yes, I forgot to say that at the beginning of the episode. But this is very brave. Thank you for doing it. If you did not submit first pages, we could not critique them. Yeah. So do we have anything else to say about the Misfits of Mermaid Diner? No? All right.
I don't think so.
Let's talk about whether or not we would turn the page. Jess?
Yeah. Sure. I mean, at this point, I want to know. I'm confused enough that I want to at least work that out. And I like the writing. I like some of what I read. So I would give it a few more pages. Yeah.
Serena?
I would totally turn the page.
I too am right on board. And it's just, you really had me with the humor of those first, the first half of this, the first 150 lines or something. I want more. You're beautiful, she whispers to the burger. I love it. Yeah. So 100% I would turn that page.
That actually made me giggle. I loved that part, whispering to the burger.
That was good. All right. Well, thank you so much to our writer, our brave writers today. We really enjoyed this. If you want to submit your first page, the information about how to do so is in the show notes, and you can also always find it at amwritingpodcast.com or amwriting.substack.com. We cannot do every single page that we get. Just gonna lay that out there. But, we're doing our best to get to the ones that we think are going to be the most helpful universally. So if we don't get to yours, it says nothing about the quality. It says only that there are other things that have been submitted to us that we think probably are going to have some more universally useful information for everyone. All right. Thanks so much, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with more Book Lab First Pages.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save. Pause. Stop.
Aww.
Thank you.